It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we are experiencing a light rain, 51 degrees, 89% humidity. Out at the airport, they are reporting southeast winds to 5, 7 miles of visibility. Look for rain this afternoon, at least until 4 p.m. Cloudy skies today. Predicted high near 57. South winds to 5. For tonight, a chance of rain. Cloudy skies tonight, gradually becoming partly cloudy with a low around 50 tonight. South winds to 15, turning to the west after midnight. Coming up on the Midday Report, Mary Peltola was put on the House Natural Resources Committee. Still no sign of a hunter who went missing off the Dalton Highway late last month. And flying in and out of Unalaska, it ain't easy.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. President Biden and members of his administration are applauding the tentative agreement reached between freight railroads and the unions representing thousands of workers. Speaking from the White House today, Biden called the deal a win for America and for both sides involved.
With this agreement, railroad companies will be able to retain and recruit workers. They'll be able to continue to operate effectively as a vital piece of our economy. They're really the backbone of the economy. I have this visual image of rails being the backbone. I mean, literally, the backbone of the economy.
The tentative deal was reached early this morning after a marathon bargaining session that was mediated by the Labor Department. The agreement averts a strike that could have exacerbated the nation's supply chain problems. Frank Morris of member station KCUR reports the two sides had been deadlocked for years on a number of issues, including paid sick leave, long hours, and on-call policies.
The big freight railroads averted any or total shutdown of the rail system primarily by offering a small concession, a few days of unpaid sick leave. Railroads keep locomotive engineers and conductors on call much of the time. Railroad staffing is very tight, and train operators can be penalized for taking unplanned time off for doctor's visits or even medical emergencies. With sick leave and a few other concessions, unions representing rail workers think they have a proposal their membership can approve. The proposal would grant a 24% pay raise by 2024. Union members still need to ratify the agreement. For NPR News, I'm Frank Morris in Kansas City.
Federal scientists say the summer was one of the hottest on record in the United States. NPR's Rebecca Hersher reports heat records were broken in Asia and Europe as well.
Climate change is causing the planet to heat up rapidly. According to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, 8 states in the Northwest and Northeast experienced their hottest August ever since record-keeping began 128 years ago. Globally, the Northern Hemisphere had its second hottest summer on record. Europe broke its previous record for the hottest summer ever, and parts of East Asia had their hottest August ever recorded. Looking ahead to the fall, federal forecasters predict basically the entire U.S. will see warmer than normal weather, and drought will persist from Texas across the plains and the west. In the Atlantic, hurricane season continues for another month and a half, and scientists warn that more storms are very likely. Rebecca Hersher, NPR News.
Tropical storm Fiona is gaining strength in the Atlantic Ocean. The National Hurricane Center says the storm is located about 450 miles east of the Leeward Islands with sustained winds of up to 50 miles per hour. You're listening to NPR News in Washington.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Alaska's Mary Peltola finished her first full day as a member of Congress yesterday, and she now has a coveted seat on the House Natural Resources Committee. The committee chairman says she'll face obstacles ahead, but claims she's already made headway on one important issue. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
The Resources Committee considers issues and bills of huge importance to Alaska. Oil development, oceans and fisheries, native sovereignty. The late Don Young was on the committee for decades and used to be its chair. Arizona Democrat Raul Grijalva is the chairman now.
You know, Mary's, I'm very happy for her and very happy for us. I think it brings a perspective. And it's not just an Alaska native perspective, it brings an Alaska perspective to us. And I look forward to it.
The next big bill the Resources Committee will take up is a rewrite of the Magnuson-Stevens Act, the law governing fishing in federal waters. Grijalva claims Peltola is already shaping it.
How has she had an influence on it already?
Because there were some areas of dispute that hadn't been resettled. She came in and basically settled them.
Can you say what those are? Bycatch.
And we're more in tune with her position than her predecessors.
Bycatch is when fishermen accidentally catch one type of fish while targeting another. Peltola wants new bycatch limits on Bering Sea trawlers, a fleet she says contributes to the decimation of salmon runs on the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers. The trawling industry rejects that theory. Josh Wilson, Peltola's interim communications director, says she's not ready to discuss the negotiations over the fisheries bill. He says she doesn't want to jinx anything. The subcommittee that will largely write the Democrats' Magnuson-Stevens bill is chaired by Jared Huffman of California. During a long series of Wednesday afternoon votes, he sat next to Peltola in the House chamber. The two engaged in what looked like a lighthearted conversation for at least 10 minutes. Grijalva says Peltola will be up against other Democrats on the Resources Committee when it comes to oil development. Peltola supports some projects they adamantly oppose.
There's probably some differences between Mary and myself regarding energy extraction. Our caucus has not supported the Willows in the past, even when the dean was promoting it. And there's going to be some differences.
The dean, that's what Grijalva calls Congressman Young. Peltola supports ConocoPhillips' Willow Project in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, as well as drilling on the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Her campaign says she's already working to convince her new Democratic colleagues those projects can be developed safely without harming subsistence activities. Grijalva says Peltola won't always get what she wants, and Don Young didn't either. Reporting from Washington, D.C., I'm Liz Ruskin.
There's still no sign of a hunter who went missing off the Dalton Highway late last month. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
61-year-old Steve Keel and friend Brian Collins, both of Tennessee, were hunting for caribou 5 miles off the Dalton Highway in the Dead Horse area when Keel disappeared August 27th. Chris Dowdy, who's from Keel's hometown of Dover, Tennessee, is leading a volunteer search effort and says Keel was last seen by Collins hiking alone toward a spot where he'd left a pack loaded with caribou meat the previous day.
It was 6/10 of a mile from the camp to where the pack was left, so it wasn't that far.
Dowdy says Keel, a Marine veteran and avid outdoors person, left camp with a pistol, a water bottle, and a cell phone, but there's no service in the area.
We don't know that he had anything to start a fire with or anything like that. He didn't have a heavy coat.
Dowdy says Collins became worried when Keel had not returned about 2.5 hours later, and he hiked out to look for him.
The pack was still there, and there was no sign of Steve. He fired a couple shots in the air. They had agreed that they got separated, that, you know, fire a couple shots in the air to help with location. And then the plan was if they would head back east towards that road, the Dalton Highway. He got there. Steve was not there, but it was dark or getting dark. And so he stayed the night in the van and then hiked back out to camp. He said fully expecting to see Steve to be back, and he wasn't there. And so that's whenever he hit the SOS button on his GPS device.
Dowdy says that triggered aerial searches by the North Slope Borough, the Coast Guard, and Civil Air Patrol, but the borough did not authorize a canine ground search.
Had the local authorities got on that as soon as it happened, I think we'd have had at least a whole lot better idea of at least what direction he went, but we don't have any of that.
The North Slope Borough did not respond to a request for additional information on the Keel case. Dowdy says a borough staffer has aided in the search, which has also included Collins, Keel's sons, he, and other Tennessee locals. Dowdy says they haven't seen any bears, and gut piles from the harvested caribou remained untouched. Dowdy describes the terrain where Keel went missing as open, soggy tundra.
Not a whole lot of landmarks out there to look at for reference other than the mountains to the south. It'd be very easy for someone to get confused as to where they were at and where they were going. A lot of it just looks the same.
Dowdy says it's possible Keel fell into a sinkhole or a mud pit. He says a lot of the ground near where Keel went missing has been covered, and he suspects Keel may have walked out of the search area.
So what we're looking for and really appealing to people is, if we had some aircraft that could really fly that river to the west. I believe it's called the Tulloch. It's about 10 miles to the west of where the camp area was, just to see if he got that far and is using that as a way to move north. There's plenty of berries, blueberries and stuff on the ground. There's plenty of fresh water everywhere. If he's able to move, he might have, made it to that river and gone north.
Dowdy says he's been contacted by many people offering help, but the remoteness of the search area makes it difficult to transport and support volunteers in the field. He says anyone willing to help with another aerial search for Steve Keel to send an email to dowdy1974@mac.com. That's dowdy1974@mac.com. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
For the community of Unalaska, expensive airline tickets and chaotic schedules are a part of daily life. Air travel is the only year-round way to get on and off the small Aleutian Island, and people in the region are well accustomed to seeing airfare fluctuate. But over the past few months, the cost of a plane ticket off the island has skyrocketed. So much so, the cost of travel is beginning to threaten the future of the community. KUCB's Maggie Nelson reports.
The cost of air travel is up across the nation. Russia's invasion of Ukraine earlier this year ignited a spike in fuel costs, and things like inflation, bad weather, pilot shortages, and loads of people traveling created even higher prices. In Unalaska, nestled between the Bering Sea and the North Pacific Ocean, those costs are taking a toll. If you want to fly from Anchorage to the Aleutian Islands community using the Alaska Airlines Mileage Program, it'll cost you around 40,000 miles. It's only about 2,500 more to fly to Dubai instead. But Dubai is on the other side of the world, about 8 times the distance from Anchorage. It costs more miles to fly from Anchorage to Unalaska than it costs to fly to Paris. If you're paying cash, a one-way ticket off-island on Raven is usually around $700, $750. And if you want a refundable ticket, it'll be about $950. That's more than a seat on the average charter. It's pretty much always been expensive to fly to and from Unalaska. It's a doozy of a trip, involving about 800 air miles, tricky Aleutian weather, and a very small runway surrounded by water, and beautiful but huge mountains. But when asked about these recent airfare hikes, the school superintendent, the mayor, a fire captain, and a local health official all say Unalaska is heading toward a breaking point.
It makes everybody rethink your life moving forward. And I am rethinking mine, too, I will say that. But I'm willing to sit down.
We're going
to
start losing some key people out here, which we already have.
And that's pretty outrageous. It makes it a lot harder to want to continue to live here as things keep growing. Oil prices, electricity, utility bills. I mean, that stuff stacks up.
Cost of fuel, whatever. So it was almost sort of a slap in the face.
Up until a few months ago, locals could get a one-way ticket to or from Anchorage on a Raven, Alaska flight for around $400 to $450 with the company's Aleutian resident fare. But they abruptly ended that program this summer. Raven is the only airline currently providing the island with regular commercial air service to Anchorage, although you can use Alaska Air Miles to fly on the regional airline. Charters are available through a few different companies, but several don't offer individual seat sales. They might have to make a stop or two on the way, and ticket sales are generally last minute and will probably cost just as much or more than a commercial flight. Raven CEO Rob McKinney told KUCB that Raven's fuel cost has more than doubled over the past 2 years, and labor has averaged a 60% increase. He says they're only pricing based on their costs to operate to Unalaska. Soaring airline prices aren't unique to Unalaska. A June report by Adobe Analytics found that prices for domestic airlines had risen around the nation nearly 50% since the start of the year. But Unalaska's remoteness and the fact that it's an island provide particularly unique challenges. School Superintendent Robbie Swint Jr. says when he went to book his tickets back to the island, he got a startling surprise.
Raven did all this pretty much at one time. We went out in June with one price, and then we came back with almost double on the way back.
The cost for his family of six to leave the island is around $7,000 now. And that's just airfare and just one way, he says.
I mean, just to travel back and forth to Anchorage, just to Anchorage, you're not doing anything else. No hotel, no car rental, no food, no travel. If you wanted to go somewhere else, it's astronomical right now.
In April, Raven Alaska and Alaska Airlines made a highly anticipated announcement that people could use their Alaska Air Miles to buy Raven tickets again. Unalaskans were ecstatic. But for people like Unalaska Fire Captain Ben Knowles, that initial honeymoon phase didn't last long. That's because it costs so many miles to get on or off the island.
It's not any better. It's a facade, you know. Oh, yeah, great, thanks. You can use 40,000 miles, but I can fly first class from Anchorage to New York for 40,000 miles. Why would I want to spend 40,000 miles on a Raven flight that takes 3 hours that my bags aren't going to get there or I might not make it?
Raven does give discounts to certain organizations in the city, for example, the school district. And even though the airline sometimes gives priority to clinic patients who need to get to Anchorage but may not be in bad enough shape to require a medevac, people are still struggling to get out. Dr. Megan Sarnecki is the medical director for the island's main clinic. She says people are avoiding seeking medical care more so than ever because they can't afford to get off the island.
But now people are hesitant to go in at all because of the cost of just flying in, right? If your insurance doesn't cover travel, like, you're not going to get your colonoscopy. And you're probably not even going to go get that, you know, cardiology workup. So people are putting stuff off.
She says that can be dangerous and can leave her and her staff facing some scary questions.
Are we sitting on a cancer because this person, like, you know, it can't afford to fly in?
Even for folks who can afford to fly, she says they're now making those trips on their own rather than with family members.
Situations like people are going off and getting chemo and their family can't be there with them. It's heartbreaking.
The clinic isn't the only local institution taking a hit. High school principal and athletic director Jim Wilson says there's no extra money in the school's budget to help the district pay for student athletes to fly out. That means fewer students will be able to travel for events. He says coaches, staff, and families will have to find new ways to come up with the money.
Because they will need to fundraise an additional amount for every one of those tickets, which, you know, is going to be anywhere from, you know, $1,500 to $2,000, depending on the price of a ticket.
And that's not including new baggage fees. Raven announced at the beginning of this month that they would be charging for all bags, citing increased operation and fuel costs. Previously, Alaska residents were able to check two free bags. City officials say they are working to arrange meetings with Raven and Alaska Airlines, as well as the Department of Transportation and the Federal Aviation Administration. Part of Unalaska's problem is its notoriously challenging runway. Landing a plane on the short runway in temperamental Aleutian weather is difficult, but it's the only current option. While there are tentative plans to renovate Unalaska's airport in the future, the groundbreaking for those expansions would be millions of dollars and likely years away from happening. Officials say the city is looking to appropriate some funding for those renovation plans toward more immediate concerns. Unalaska is also awaiting the delayed arrival of Aleutian Airways, a new regional airline operated by Sterling Airways. The company ran a test flight to Unalaska Wednesday morning, successfully landing a Saab 2000, a larger plane that used to fly to the island prior to a fatal crash in 2019. The airway still needs to get FAA certification before they can start selling flights. In the meantime, locals will just have to wait out the storm or fork out the extra cash to leave the island, if they can afford it. In Unalaska, I'm Maggie Nelson.
Read diverse, read indie. on Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors from the world of independent publishing. Kiyomi O'Connor's book, A Sky of Infinite Blue, A Japanese Immigrant's Search for Home and Self, explores her trying childhood in Japan and her journey as she emigrates to the United States. The book follows her through her travels, falling in love with her future husband, only to lose him after 2.5 decades to cancer, and navigating grief and unresolved trauma. She also discusses how, after many years of struggle and searching, she finally found the love and light that existed within her all along. We spoke with her about this most personal story.
Culturally speaking, in Japan, mental health is not really the major issue for us. We tend to hide. So past maybe 10, 20 years, things are changing. Mental health is also regarded as one of the disease or illness of others. You know, like when we have an illness physically, we take care of it. So but the mental health was always hidden in a way. We can't speak. I was hiding all of the difficulties. I set up myself wearing armor to just compensate the balance of my life.
That's Kiyomi O'Connor on her new book, A Sky of Infinite Blue, A Japanese Immigrant's Search for Home and Self, which has just been released. Read Diverse, Read Indie is presented by the Independent Book Publishers Association.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 15th day of September, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 7:40. It will set again at 8:27. That will give us 12 hours and 47 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 33 degrees, set in 1987, and our record high was 73, set in 1985. Currently 51 degrees. Light rain is falling. Southeast winds to 5 miles per hour. 89% humidity, and they have 7 miles of visibility out at the airport. Look for rain this afternoon and cloudy skies. High near 57. South winds to 5. A chance of rain tonight with cloudy skies gradually becoming partly cloudy. Low of 50 overnight. South winds to 15, turning to the west after midnight. And rain tomorrow, at least between 11 a.m. and 5 p.m., high near 57 tomorrow, northwest winds to 10, turning to the southeast tomorrow afternoon. We have a high tide coming up at 5:45 this afternoon. The tide has recently turned. That will be an 8.6-foot tide here on the east side. Our next low tide will be at 12:24 a.m., just after midnight, and be 8/10. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 6:11 p.m. That will be a 13.4-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 12:51 a.m., almost 1 o'clock, of 1.1 feet. Let's check out the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's latest announcement.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 37. Date issued 11 o'clock on September 13th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Sunday, September 18th to 6 p.m. Tuesday, September 20th in the following areas. The Eastside Kodiak District, except for the Inner Ugak and Outer Ugak Bay sections, remain closed. The Outer Aikuluk, Halibut Bay, Sturgeon, and Outer Karluk sections of the Southwest Kodiak District District and the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. As previously announced, fishermen were reminded that until further notice in that portion of the Northwest and Southwest Kodiak District, south of a latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmalade to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side. Small craft advisory through Friday. Southwest 25 today, seas to 8 feet, coming up to 9 feet tonight. For tomorrow, southwest 20, seas to 8 feet. Southwest 25 tomorrow night, seas to 9 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, south 20 today, seas to 7 feet. For tonight, southwest 20, seas 6 feet, coming down to 4 feet after midnight. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, south 15, seas to 3 feet. For Saturday, southwest 25, seas to 7 feet. The Senior Citizens of Kodiak Incorporated is in need of paper bags right now. Please feel free to drop them off Monday through Friday between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. at the Senior Center. Thank you. Kodiak Public Broadcasting Corporation invites you to our annual meeting and open house tomorrow. The open house starts at 5:30, and the meeting will be broadcast on KMXT starting at 6:17 p.m. right after the Alaska Fisheries Report. Also starting tomorrow, the free electronic recycling event. That's going on tomorrow and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at St. Hermann's Harbor Gravel Pit, which is just to the right of the public boat launch. And you can bring all that stuff that's been sitting in the corner, old microwaves, toasters, laptops, computers, monitors, phones, tablets, radios, TVs, DVD players, printers, copiers, faxers, cables and wires, fluorescent bulbs, lead-acid batteries. But please do not bring large appliances. Also leave your smoke alarms at home as well as scrap metal, no household batteries or ballasts, no medical equipment, and please nothing that contains a liquid. But again, that starts tomorrow and goes on Saturday too, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. over in St. Hermann's Harbor. The Downtown Kodiak Revitalization Special Committee is meeting tomorrow. That meeting will begin at 9:30 a.m. in the Kodiak Public Library. It's open to the public, and agenda and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. The meeting will also be web-streamed from that site. For additional information, call the City Clerk's office at 907-486-8636. At the library today at 3 p.m. is the library's next chess club meeting. Drop in to learn, practice, or sharpen your chess skills in a cozy, friendly environment. No experience is necessary, and it's open for all ages. And tomorrow, or rather on Saturday, from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., the library is celebrating this summer's reading program. 200 active readers collectively logged over 8,700 hours of reading since May. That's worth celebrating, so they're going to have grand prizes awarded to Kodiak's top readers. They're also going to have hot dogs and live music with Ellie Mutiller, as well as games and fun. Again, that starts at 1 p.m. on Saturday at the library. The City Ports and Harbor Advisory Board will hold a meeting on Tuesday at 12 p.m. in the Fisherman's Hall. The meeting is open to the public. Agendas and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. The meeting will be web-streamed as well from that site. For more information, contact the City Harbor Department at 486-8080. And the Kodiak City Council will have a work session on Tuesday and a regular meeting on Thursday. Both meetings will begin at 7:30 p.m. and be held at the Kodiak Public Library. They will be also broadcast right here on KMXT on 100.1 FM and web-streamed from the City of Kodiak website, where you can also find meeting packets and the link. For more information, contact the City Clerk at 486-8636.
September is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. On Saturday, September 17th, Canada's Community Health Department is hosting a free 2K walk, 5K run in support of suicide prevention awareness. Walk, run, or simply attend to show your support for those who are grieving and those who are struggling. Together we can make a difference. For more information and to register, visit www.healthykodiak.org or visit the Healthy Kodiak Facebook page. This message is brought to you by Kodiak Area Native Association.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.